Hello, hello. Welcome to Index Podcast, where the three of us get together every couple of weeks to discuss on-chain data, chart crimes, and metrics that move the crypto industry. The three of us being Denning, the on-chain corgi at Flashbots.
Hello.
Hildobi, the resident data house elf at Dragonfly.
GM.
And me, that is Boxer, the community powerhouse at Dune. Before we start, we have to get a few things out of the way. Nothing we say in this podcast should be relied upon as legal, financial, investment, tax, or even life advice. The views expressed here are only representative of our individual opinions and not those of our employers. With that out of the way, we are recording on Valentine's Day. That is the 14th of February. So just to put things in context, because we'll be talking industry news here. So things are fresh out of the oven. And if you watch this in a couple of days, some things might already be outdated. With that out of the way, we have our chart of the week or topic of the week. And Denning is going to lead us down into the rabbit hole of Farcaster.
Yes, I'm pretty excited about this. I feel like there was definitely a hype started with the launch of RAMS in the past few weeks. There was a hackathon in SF and a lot of people went and stuff. I want to start with some chatters with all of us to go through some basic of like what is Farcaster and how we're using it, etc. So like maybe how did you guys get into Farcaster? Are you guys on Farcaster? How did you get into it and how are you using it today? For me, myself, I think I saw it posted from a friend on Instagram like a year and a half ago. And I was like, this is cool. I was like expecting for a crypto social app for like forever. And then they told me like, you need to message Dan on Twitter and to get whitelisted and get included. I thought I was kind of early, but recently I looked up my PID, like Farcaster ID. I'm like 3,000 plus or something. So I think Dobby is earlier than me.
Yeah, I mean, slightly. I also heard it from somewhere, I think like Twitter, and also DM'd Dan, and I'm like 2000 something. But it's like, I think there's right now there's like, do you know how many total users there are?
I think it's like 100K plus, yeah, today.
Oh, nice.
And
okay.
It was all manually whitelisted, like until recent. I think it's around the hype of Frames and so many people want to join the app, and they were like, hey, let's, you know, now open this. And so everyone can sign up. But I think we're lucky because it was whitelisted. It's still like a beta test kind of, so it's free for us. But I think Boxer probably paid for the sign up because I think you joined it recently, right?
Yeah, Boxer was very late to the party. do you guys know if the FIDs, the Farcaster IDs are just sequential? Because my Farcaster ID is literally 280,000.
Like, yeah, I think it's sequential. The thing is, like, there's a dashboard here that on Farcaster, it's like the person from the Nainar team, who we can talk later, but basically it's Farcaster data, and there's like 170K. But then there's some Farcaster IDs that are higher, and that has me confused. So maybe they're removing spam in some way, and I'm not sure. So, but I thought it was sequential.
Maybe you
sure.
can create an account and then never do anything, and then it doesn't show up in the Farcaster dataset. Maybe like if you don't even react to anything or something like that, like maybe it just doesn't show up. Maybe that's like the way the data is structured. But anyways, yeah. I only signed up I think last week or something. I had to pay like a $5 fee, but really smooth onboarding. Really well done. It's just like you can pay via Apple Pay. It's not like deposit money to like this layer 7 and like do some like I don't know jump through hoops. It's like Apple Pay. And I think I paid €5 or $5, I don't know. And then I also paid like an additional $1 or $2 to also jump over to Supercast, which is like a different client for Farcaster. So yeah, in general, really smooth experience, really well done. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you use like Typefully for Twitter? Because I think Supercast is like the equivalent of Typefully for Twitter. It's like where you can have like draft tweets better and like It's like Twitter Pro in a way, and I guess Supercast is like Falcasta Pro. Somewhat.
No, like I was just I actually had like a I talked to Wash, however that guy is like really called, the developer or like one of the guys behind Supercast. I talked to him like 2 years back, so I was just interested in like what is he doing here and like what is this about?
It also allows you to sign up or like connect your wallet through different wallet or and even through different networks. So like you can choose any of those. EVM chain seems like they have a bunch of integration and like Solana integration is coming. So I guess like also like I guess since Dolby you were kind of early to Farcaster, how has it been changing so far, like of how the community or the sentiment has been or how you have been using it? Like for me, when I just joined it, I was like excited about it and I listened to like a few podcasts of Dan's and I thought I was really solid that it seems like the team is like has been actually working on it for like 4 or 5 years and they're really carefully trying to roll it out by manually whitelisting. And I think like they have this philosophy of like very strongly connected network will have much more value than, you know, like a widely spread out, like trying to just make adoption happen quickly. Like, for example, look at like Clubhouse, I guess it's like a dead thing today. And it was so popular back then. And then like, I remember when I just joined Farcaster and there was like not many people and I follow some people and I thought the most interesting thing that differentiating it from just the crypto Twitter is there was this like NFT page of Veron's portfolio. And so I kind of like stalked a bunch of friends' portfolio and then like followed by some stuff. And I think I was following like Tim Beko and I saw him was like, there was a feed for a while about like who minted some new NFT. And I was like following him. And I think I made some bucks from flipping some of that. And it was truly cool that there was a NFT community because like if I click into Crypto Corgi and there was like bunch of people that I know and more people that I don't know who have this token. And I wish they had maybe some group chats expanded into that page and stuff. And I think it's possible today with friends. So yeah, it was really cool. Not many people there. So I felt safer to post about like more personal stuff. I was like posting some emo casts there. And then also like I was posting some Chinese casts and like there's only like two Chinese guy was like replying there. Who also is building a Farcaster. I think, and at some point I saw Vitalik was posting a lot there and a lot of more developer coming in. So yeah, curious your experience.
There's like a thing where since it was like more niche and there was like fewer users, it was less hostile to post on than Twitter can be.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bit of a refuge for some bigger accounts to like post so that like can have actually like conversations with other devs and other people like this that are building in the ecosystem rather than getting, I don't know, a bunch of like spam. And early on, there was barely any, you know, spam accounts. I think now it's changed a bunch where, you know, they started like focusing with the NFT feed thing. That was like the main differentiator at first from Twitter. I think now it changed with like channels as well, which makes it more of a hybrid between, Twitter and Reddit. And I really like this because when I post on Twitter, I can't really shit post on Twitter. Otherwise people will think like, you know, usually I post data, which is somewhat factual, at least pretty factual usually. And if I put a random shit post in there, people are like confused. Whereas mm-hmm. here I can like segment it into like different channels. So it feels more, you know, you can like cater to different audiences within the same account, which I think is pretty cool, you know. It's a good hybrid. It's
almost like on Twitter, you have one particular, you know, image you're trying to build a community and audience for, but here you can have multiple personalities, you know, across different channels.
Yeah, exactly.
You can live out different aspects of your personality, I think, is a bit of a way.
Yeah, there's also like, I don't know, you know, Michael Silverling, he, on Twitter, he posts like 50% data, 50% American football.
Sports.
Yeah. And I don't really care about like the data, to be honest. I don't really know too much about American football. And, you know, it's like, I think it's easier if you can segment out your like followers and it's just easier for everyone, even for you, the poster, because then like you're directly like talking to the people who are interested.
Yeah, I've actually I've deinstalled Twitter from my phone and I'm Podcaster only Maxi now. And it's like a way better way to like kind of customize and curate your information diet as well. Because like on Twitter, I just get like fed world news and like whatever is like the current topic of the day. And in Farcaster, I'm just hanging out on like /fitness and /wellness and nicer topics, /Dune, /index. Meet us there. but yeah, it's like on Twitter, you're kind of like exposed to the global algorithm. It's just like people post about whatever. And then it's like you can really like choose what am I interested in and what do I actually want to expose myself to instead of just being like fed this like random like algorithmic information diet. So I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I think the algo will evolve and maybe like I'm curious about how when, you know, more and more people come in, like it could become just the same. So I don't know, like it's all about like how good the algo is. Because it's not your feed is not sequential on Farcaster as far as I know. It's like it's mostly based on currently relevant topics. But if you refresh, you could have suddenly a cast that is older show up top than before. So it's really not sequential. And that, you know, that's what like the algorithm is what is fucking up on Twitter and can feed you like stuff you're not really interested in. But we'll see how it evolves. Because I think another good comparison to like Farcaster is Lens. And I don't know if you guys ever looked at Lens? I mean, I don't know how it's evolved since. I think there's like a V2, but way back when I tried it, it was like just spam. Like just spam. There was like nothing to me that felt interesting there. Maybe it's evolved. I think like if you listen to Dan, he's been really focused on like the spam issue, because it is an issue that will like forever need to be addressed. Instead of going for like, I think Farcaster said they don't want to have a token multiple times. So I think they have the right focus, you know, focus on like content rather than like making it like Web3, whatever. You know, it's actually a good focus. And it's not like, you know, it's like sufficiently decentralized is how he describes it. It's not like fully decentralized in a way that it's not. There's like hubs which are specific to Farcaster instead of all posting everything to the blockchain for to be more gas efficient. But it's an interesting design.
Yeah. Speaking of which, they don't want to launch token, but there are people launching for them, right? Like I mean, like there's Degen token, Frem, LFG, and like met a few others that's been on the hype as well in the past weeks. And what is Degen token even, you know?
Yeah, I think Degen, so there's like, I mean, meme coins are like a part of crypto culture, I guess, anyway, so you can't like take that away. And on a new social media that's all about crypto, I mean, it's just like impossible not to have meme coins, right? And so people, I think, created like a bunch of meme coins. And some of them were like, if you mention them in your cast, the like button changes. There's like Degen and Whoa, which are two that I can think of. Maybe there's more. And I think there's like, those are like custom integrations built by the Farcaster team, the Wobcast team. Actually, we also need to, like, people are getting confused between Wobcast and Farcaster, which are somewhat different. You know, it's like different teams. But, yeah, those, since they were integrated, I think they took a bit more of like they became more of the Farcaster like meme coins. And now Degen is one that you can tip under every cast. So you can like say, tip this guy 100 Degen or whatever. I'm not too sure exactly how the behind the scene works. I think it's on Base that the token exists. Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, it's like a platform made for crypto. I mean, made by crypto people. And of course, crypto people are going to be the first to onboard. So it's going to be very prominent meme coins in the first place, right?
I think tipping coin is like the better. I mean, it is in some sense a meme coin, but its primary purpose is not, like, it's kind of gambling, but it's also just tipping. And I think like, yeah, calling it Degen is like a bit, I don't know, like fits very well into like crypto culture and like gambling culture. But I think the primary kind of idea here is really just to encourage other people by tipping them. So like tipping them, I don't know, $10, $50, something like that. And then it somehow took off and actually has like a realist, like a kind of big monetary value now. I read some posts that like the NFT that you got for being early on Farcaster and the Degen airdrop together were worth like over $10,000 US. But yeah, I think that was not the initial purpose, and it was more like, let's like see how we can use this decentralized infrastructure or this permissionless infrastructure to deploy something like a tipping thing, totally permissionlessly, and then like natively integrated into the kind of wallet that Farcaster has integrated, even though Farcaster doesn't really have a wallet integrated. It's like a, I don't know, it's like a layered system.
Yeah.
There is an official token for Warpcast, actually. Like Warps is technically, it's not an on-chain token, but I think it's pegged, I believe 1,000 Warps is $1. Not sure. Maybe it's I think it's 1,000.
Okay.
It's technically, like, you can tip natively on Warpcast. If you look at, like, sometimes on some casts, you have, like, likes, retweets, comments, and the amount of Warps that were given. So they had this in mind. So it's interesting to have, like, different tipping, like, avenues and seeing, like, which one would actually take off as, like, the dominant one. I think Warps probably makes the most sense, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I think, like, if you see the intention of all these tokens, which is very consistent with the team and, you know, the community, which is, you know, really trying to incentivize for community building and also, like, the direct relation between content creator and their audience. If you compare this with, like, friend.tech, that is a token built in with a curve. So it naturally just encouraged more of a speculation and trading kind of related activities. So, I saw there was like a random tweet about, like, you know, there's kind of a comparison or kind of like, I don't know, saying friend.tech now is like flopped to its 1% at its peak activities. Meanwhile, Farcaster is boosting, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's a very fair comparison that, like, you know, when you build a social app, you really need to care about, you know, user interaction rather than speculation. So, yeah. And on the point, Dobby, you mentioned earlier, like, I think a lot of people had a confusion about what is Warpcast and Farcaster. So I think initially the app was called Farcaster, but at some point they tried to differentiate it about, you know, Farcaster itself is a protocol, and Warpcast is just a client, or my understanding is basically one of the front end or use case or an app that can be built on top of Farcaster. Yeah. And then, like, there's this hub thing, which is, I understand, is like, my understanding is basically like node operator of Farcaster relay network. And there's this dashboard pulled up from Spindle, and they have this nice, you know, global graph of all the hubs across the globe in the map. It looks like it's quite decentralized, which is like available on US and Europe and even Asia too, Australia. Funny that everything in, I don't know, China is like offshore-ish pretty much, which I assume is probably not very legal there. I don't know. There's one hub in Shanghai. Yeah. And like with this, you know, the point is that basically it's a protocol. It's run by multiple hubs. So if any of the US hub of like running the Warpcast clients is done, or say you have to like sanction or like OFAC, you know, complying with the regulation. Like, for example, maybe the US client needs to like censor some stuff, you know, like filter out some content. You can still get it from maybe some other, you know, hubs, and you can still have the full information that's locked on the protocol. And I think that's one thing about censorship resistant. Something else is that, like, for example, I've seen like this diagram of like all the projects that's built on Farcaster ecosystem. So now you know more of, as in, like, Farcaster is a protocol. So there's many applications that can build on top of it. There's like different vertical of like different clients, different like chain being involved, and like projects involved, NFT involved, and there's multiple channels here listed. Like, for example, this is Launchcaster is that like one example of a app built on Farcaster. And my understanding is that like this is the rank of all the Web3 apps supposedly. And if you connect your wallet, you can basically sum up or down, like voted. So it, to me, it's basically like a Web3 app Yelp. So you can rate the app, say you like it or not. And so there's like many things that can be built on top of it. So speaking of the hype, which was frames, so the team dropped the frames feature, like I guess like 2 weeks ago. And I think like there's a lot of confusion from people, like what exactly is it? Some people say, you know, pretty much in Web2 translation, it's iframe. And my understanding is that you are able to now like put one picture and four buttons, and you can define a button yourself. I think the most powerful thing to me standing out from that is that, you know, enabling user to define a button rather than just like retweet, reply on Twitter. So now it differentiates even more from, you know, a crypto Twitter. And there's like a whole set of like very creative frames that build out from that hype. And some people even build some games there, although it's like very early and kind of like, you know, very primitive form. I remember you kind of need to click through a button, like one of the buttons, like go next frame of a game. That's definitely not the best experience for a game. But there are also some interesting thing like group chats. And I found this one that's really interesting about like roast my PFP. So like I clicked in here, you kind of need to like recast it and then like click this thing, and then it will, I think it's kind of like generating some ChatGPT text based on your image. Pretty spicy. Yeah. So curious, you guys, have you seen any funny frames there? Or any, you know, hypes around you guys?
I saw one very cool one. I don't know if you saw Coinbase's ad yesterday on like the penny, on how like so many pennies are lost and whatever. There's like millions lost every year, whatever. And putting it on chain, like as whatever. It's a crypto ad. And they made a frame alongside where, wait, I can share my screen. So here is just a frame where you can mint a penny. So it mints an NFT. I think I've already done it, so you should just say I've done it. And then you can like get a hat that is like discounted except for one penny that you pay. I think it was a pretty cool ad alongside the video, and it's a good flow for you know, consumer in general, where you can just very quickly from within the app directly like go buy something. I think it's a really, really powerful flow. I don't know how that'll evolve in the future, but I think it has potential.
Yeah, Mint is definitely one like major use case among all those frames. Like for example, like I've seen some other use case of like people post about, you know, group chats of all the people in the channel, and you basically just need to do this join 4x ease and basically click the button behind the thing. It's like minting a token and send it to you, and like then verified and like token gated kind of app. Runs behind. And I saw Mira also posted like a really interesting one, which is I believe also just like a mint kind of functionality in the front, but then it allows you to basically subscribe and basically kind of like token gated like feed or subscription content, which is pretty cool. Like I can see this be applied among, you know, so like New York Times or all those, you know, newspaper and stuff that really actually, you know, block you from a paywall. Speaking of which, we're a data podcast, so I'm going to pull up a bunch of metrics. People being really excited about building some metrics around Farcaster. Like, for example, we have this, you know, thread from Markov. He was looking at, like, basically how many accounts across different chain for Farcaster. I think, honestly, this one is more like number of transactions. But I found another chart here. Let me see. There's a bunch of them. Was a little bit like a chart crime. So this dash, it's a good dash. So not really just trying to troll the creator. But you can see like there's 144 connect addresses. But what makes me wonder is that, like, you know, they allow you to connect multiple wallets. Like in my app, I can connect to like an address on Optimism, an address on, you know, any other chain.
Can you quickly walk back and explain that concept of like how a Farcaster account works and then how you can connect addresses or whatever?
Yeah, my understanding is that, like, following what we were saying earlier, is that Farcaster is kind of like a two-layer network. So It has its own relay network of like running the hub and stuff. It also creates accounts, it allow user to connect their wallets from the EVM chain. And I think one reason they designed this is security reason, so that like you, when you only need to sign with your main wallet from like ETH once when you create the account. And in the future, whenever you're like casting and stuff, you're just signing from your Farcaster layer kind of accounts. But in the app, you can see that you can connect multiple wallets across different chain, which is great, I guess, that you can allow you to interact with a cross-chain application or clients built, I guess, or even frames built on Farcaster. But then this is kind of like a chart crime here. Like if you're counting all the connected addresses, one user can connect multiple addresses, then this is definitely over counting here. And also in terms of, you know, total connected addresses, I wouldn't call this a crime here because they didn't call it like total number of users, right? So it's very actually cautious the way they presented the data. But if anyone is misinterpreted as number of user, then might be kind of, yeah.
I'm confused about the chart below, because my like my main address is all of those. It's like it's on BNB, Shello, Polygon, is like all of those. So like, how does that work? I don't know. You know, I've probably used most of those chains. I think this just pulls up all the addresses that were ever connected, and then like counts how many have been transacting. But instead of like counting once for all chains, all EVM chains, it's like, you know, I could, if I transact on all those chains the same week or day, I don't know how aggregated this is, but like I'm guessing I'll be counted multiple times, right?
So I think like, you know, presenting the data, presenting the wallets across chain is definitely a duplicate accounting. So this is definitely some overcounting chart crime right here. There is another interesting dashboard from Spindle that is accounting mostly frames side of metrics. It seems like it's only been like a week plus, maybe 2 weeks. And there's been like a lot of deployments or, you know, development on frames. Like the most popular one seems like it's the Manifold Farcaster, the Zora one. There's, you know, transaction frame, etc. And this activity chart is definitely just like up to the right, like booming kind of activity. So, and they also have a explorer to show you like what's the most popular cast and stuff. I have to say, most of them, when I tried, it's really, a lot of them are actually like similar to a Twitter poll. So you just click on different tabs and you're just voting if you want this or not. Some are mostly minting. So I think that's the most of the representation of the frame use cases for now. But it's very interesting. It can be wrapped into different context semantics. Some other Dune Dash that's very nice is... we have this one that's like looking at the breakdown of different protocol, how to say, apps in the protocol. So it's like a breakdown of all the clients that Farcaster actually now has in its ecosystem. And you see this big purple is Warpcast. And the second one is like Slogbot. And I tried to look it up what it is. No one knows what it is, actually. I couldn't find much info about it. And there's Farcord. So yeah. There's actually a, you know, list of application that's actually people are running on and using. There's multiple channels with its metrics. Like, seems like the most popular channel right now is Degen channel, which is in brand with the hype of the token, Farcaster channel, on-chain summer channel, base channel. Dolby, you also created a indexed plot channel. So I mean, that's great that now we can use that as a direct channel to talk to the audience, and we can see feedback. We can know like what people think about it and like what are the topics they are interested to know more. We need to pump the rank in the list of the channels for us, though. We need to think about how.
I saw the, like, Dan has a podcast with other people like Antonio from Spindle and whatever, called Moments of Zen. And they have a channel called MOZ. And I thought what was cool about it is people are able to like basically reply to whatever happens in the podcast and like talk with the hosts. And it leads to some interesting conversation. So that's like what got me inspired by to buy some warps and create indexed for us. And yeah, with our 30 followers so far, we can do bangers maybe. So
yeah. And then like also something that amazed me is that like there's this, another dashboard from the same person that's like so detailed about some like specific social interaction that get indexed. And it's like, I feel like this is almost like a hater dashboard because like it's checking like how many unfollowers on the client and you can kind of see like who unfollowed you. There's certainly also like recast, cast, which are the main buttons right now, similar to Twitter. There's like total deleted cast. I wonder why you would want this metrics. And it's like, what was the deleted cast information? Because it's all on blockchain, right? So it's all like, are able to be indexed because it's once it's logged there, even it's deleted, it's still possible to be found out. So who are the new unfollowers of each individual? So it's like, if you want to find your haters, you can come here and check. It's really cool. Yeah, and so there's another one that's pretty cool, which is from Pixel Hack. And
Can we take a step back real quick? So I think like one of the unique things about this would never be possible with Twitter, because Twitter's API is totally closed, and the way we can now index this data is like you can just go and build like an analytics page for Nana, for Farcaster, using Nana's data on Dune or on other data platforms if they had the Farcaster data. So like that's just like, I think that's pretty huge. And it's, it really just shows like how a decentralized social network can have certain benefits over just storing everything on Twitter servers.
Yeah, I think it's totally really cool.
Does it mean if they add like a block button, like you could see who has blocked you basically? Which on Twitter you can't really. I don't think like you can't.
I think unless you go to the profile. It's on the client level. Like you can't even block.
Yeah. Anything. Oh yeah.
Like, on Warpcast you can only mute someone. So like they can still interact with you and stuff. You'll just not see it. So I think it must be like I would assume it's on a client level, but I don't know.
Yeah. No, that would make sense.
Yeah. There's another nice thread from Andrew this morning, right on this morning, about he carefully, you know, detailed, how to say, or tiered, you know, different users across Farcaster and also the channels. I think it's very nice that it's kind of opinionated. So like he has a bunch of tiers here. It was like VIP or influencer or a star or just active, you know, like live. Or it's NPC, as in like you just logged in and you didn't really do much. Yeah, I think I might be active. I don't know, between active and NPC, we'll see. It's very interesting to the tier user based on their activities, because everything is logged on chain and you can very detailed to check out like the engagement. And he has this wall rank of these different users, and you can also link them to what's the top channels they are actually active in and stuff. And also he tiered the channels to be stadium, subcultural, niche, or friends, or quiet. I think it's really nice. It's like with a lot of like social elements attached to it. In the dashboard, you can pretty much also do it like a explorer way. So you can check out a particular channel, check out like a time range, check out like account addresses, track this user's all the action. It's a little bit creepy, I guess. But I mean, yeah, it's cool. I think with all these data that's exposed or like transparent on chain, you know, you would think about, do you want a like account with your full name or do you want to stay anonymous? And so it's an interesting debate about, you know, showing your identity on chain. Like, what is the identity you really want to show on chain? So yeah.
Do you wish you were still anonymous?
I think I'm okay with my handle probably most of the time. Yeah. I probably don't want to show. I think it also depends on the adoption level, right? Because right now it's mostly like crypto people having fun. But what if one day, say, all my family and friends are in Farcaster as well, and It'd be like, you know, oh, okay, this person is now actually, you know, doing this thing or going to this restaurant with his family or like went to this place with his partner, etc. That's like way more scarier.
Yeah, but that's like Twitter. But that's like Twitter. You can have like anon accounts and like doxed ones.
I think the even more crazier part is that, you know, Farcaster is linked to your on-chain wallet. So it's like also linked with all your financial activity. Like Twitter is still one step less of that. So this is more like, you know, exposed with your wallet. Yeah, it's like basically showing everyone your Chase app and all the like transactions on-chain. So yeah.
It's amazing for analysts though. I just put that there.
Totally, totally. Yeah. But I mean, like it's for, also going to make the targeted ads marketing even worse, right?
Yeah, that's probably, for example, like there's this whole discussion of like who is a solo staker. And you could actually like tie, you know, addresses to Farcaster handles and see who's an individual. And that would, I'm just thinking out loud right now because I'm working on e-stuff as well. But yeah, there's some really, really, it's so cool to have all this data on hand. It's both cool and some things you wish, like, you know, it's like also a showcase for why we need privacy to be better on chain. And, you know, there's some teams working on this. So, yeah, but we'll see. It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. One last chart I want to pull up for Farcaster. We talked long enough about it. Is, you know, since it's charging fee right now for a new signup and like it also has warps, one thing would ask, is like how, what's the revenue of the protocol, and I think this might be also another like chart climb slightly because it's like a, you know, cumulative protocol revenue over time. It's like cumulative time series, everything like that is a chart climb, right? Because like, you know, if I could say, you know, Facebook launched 20 years ago and it's like 400,000 like billions of revenue, and you, if you compare it with something launched in 1800, you know, so maybe a better way to present this, I suggest, is annualized revenue projected. So, but overall, reading this number is like, so far, Farcaster has made like 600K of protocol revenue since September, pretty much October, or mid-October. So that's pretty amazing to see. Sample like a multi-million.
It comes in big waves if you look at like at the bottom. I don't know what the first wave was, but I guess the second one's like frames. For now, it seems to have died down a bit, but it's still probably in somewhat strong levels, I guess. If you wait, if you had the cumulative one, the orange thing, I just want to see how the blue one is faring. Okay, so it's still pretty high. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see when it starts like being sustained. On a sustained level, or if it like constantly is like peaks.
But the peaks are getting bigger, so that's
I mean that's I agree, that's great. And the foundation as well, like the, you can see like the minimums are getting also higher, but
That's can we quickly how the
can we quickly summarize kind of the key metrics of this? So how many daily active users are there? How many users in total have signed up? And how, like, I guess 800,000 revenue so far, is that kind of like directionally correct?
Yeah, I think it's like 100K plus users total sign up. And all of them are concentrated in the last month. So it's also like 100K last month's MAU. And it has like a over 600K protocol revenue right now. It has a booming ecosystem. You know, there's like over also 100K of frames just being developed within a week and a half. So yeah, pretty cool, pretty cool. So I guess with that, we wrap up with Farcaster. And one thing I wanted to show you guys was something called Dymo, which is in the same hype train with Farcaster, because it's basically a money app that allows you to transfer USDC for now. They might support more tokens in the future to your friends or any contacts. And it's basically like a Venmo, basically. You can pay your friends with crypto to like pay off a, you know, dinner, etc. And it doesn't really take gas fee because it's built on Base. It's using account abstraction. It's a smart contract wallet that's built on ERC 4337. I know you guys don't use Venmo, I guess, so PayPal equivalent in Europe. So
this is where being a European podcast shows different perspectives. I've never used Venmo in my life. I don't think it's like popular anywhere in Europe. In France, we have an equivalent for it, but it's not Venmo. But it's like, because it ties into your bank, you know, it has to have special integrations for each bank. Whereas the cool thing with this is it just works with, you know, it's a GAN abstraction. So any address, wherever you're from, can send to whoever in a permissionless way. I think that's pretty cool. It's like,
has somebody used this already? Like how do I deposit money into this and then I can send it around, or like how does it work?
Yeah, so I think the team is still in very small like beta version. So like I got a sign up from DevConnect when I was in Turkey, and so there was like a code and I signed up and there was like $5 they sent out. So there's definitely some cost that they're spending in onboarding. But now I think you can invite your friends by just send a link to their phone number. And so then basically send them like 1 cent or any amount of money, and they can accept that, like, and then onboard it to Dymo. I think it's still very small because it's like I did some Dash last night and it's total of like 1,300 people. So it's an early alpha, I guess. So if something interesting is that like people being praising about it, which is like it's really smooth in terms of the UI. Really just like one click, similar to how you use those money app in real life. It also didn't really cost any gas fee. You didn't need to care about like what is Ethereum gas fee, or even what is a layer 2 gas fee, what is a layer 1 gas fee. What else? I think like something kind of also interesting to the topic we just talked about earlier is that now everything is on chain. So it could be kind of, you know, sketchy that if you show basically have all your money relations, you know, showed on chain. So I did something last night where basically I just pulled up all the USDC transfer that had a user op attached to it in the base networks logs related to Dymo. And you can clearly see this like cluster of all the users that was a bunch of hubs. And I think this is a funder, DC, Porsche, and I see a bunch of blue here, which are all like recognizable, like Ethereum Foundation researchers. You could see myself onboarded Adobe here to this Ponzi and another friend. And it's very funny. You can see the social relation, who sends money to who the most, right? And there was something interesting. You can also do analysis about like a SIBO attack. Like one cluster here, you can see all these addresses. They only received once and from these addresses. And so like, for example, if you define some heuristic of saying all the out degree of one address has a lot of out degree in the network, and then all the one degree recipient of this addresses has zero out degree, it's pretty much possible is a SIBO cluster. And so with that, you can pretty much, you know, do a lot of interesting things to filter out, like say farmers. And
if you look back at the dashboard you showed before, I'm pretty sure the peaks are when there's conferences, which is pretty interesting. So like it looks like the October, November is like when you had like Istanbul and a bunch of conferences. Then it died down during like New Year's, mm-hmm. and then now it's mm-hmm. coming back up. Mm-hmm. But this seems to be, you know, there's like one major user, especially probably around DevConnect, and here it's now it looks like a lot more diverse of a set of users. So I guess that's a pretty good sign for the app.
To clarify, this is my mistake. I took this particular chart breakdown as my paymasters. So paymaster, my understanding in account abstraction context is that it's similar to like a block builder. It's like, I think, paymaster is some sort of like smart contract operation, you know, like that's handling user ops. So it's not really user. It's like my transaction can be sent to this paymaster.
Okay, we'll move this section to the chart crime section then.
yeah. Totally. With that, I think that's what I want to show about Dymo. Yeah.
Maybe can we... So this is an app that uses your phone number as the primary key to access the money, I guess?
I think you could say that, yeah. you probably can only sign up once with one phone number.
Does it ask you to like store your like key recovery phrase or whatever in like an iCloud, or is it just the phone number?
I think it's just phone number, but let me check. I don't think so.
Don't remember.
Yeah, for me, I think it was just about entering a number, and that's about it. I'm pretty sure it like checks that's your number, and then that's it.
And then you deposit money into this, and then you can kind of transfer the money by just.
Yeah, then you have like an account associated where you can deposit to. You can Well, I'm looking into it. You can create a passkey backup and stuff, but it's not like. It's not out of the gate when you enter the app.
It's a consumer. They want to make it easy, which I totally understand. Yeah. I'm just kind of like wondering what's the setup here. So they basically create a smart account for you, and then you control that smart account using this app, and you can deposit. Which currencies can I deposit? Like USDC or just
USDC? Just USDC, I think.
USDC on Base, like solely on Base.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the cool thing is to onboard me. Danning just sent me like $2, and like I didn't have to do anything at first. If you look at the app, you can't sign up unless you have a code, and then it basically created the account for me without me needing anything to do. I just need to prove that's my number, and then that's it. Like I didn't need any other steps. So it's like a really really fluid flow for onboarding.
Okay. Yeah. USDC on Base is like. Not something I would readily have laying around. So like, I think that can I load money in there via Apple Pay or via Google Pay or something?
Deposit. You can bridge from any wallet. Deposit from Coinbase. I guess Coinbase, the base Coinbase tie-up often has both of the flows. When an app integrates, one is usually the two. And then you can withdraw to any address, but it's on Base USDC, as you said, Yeah, it's just USDC.
So I guess it's just like a nice front end for sending USDC around.
Yeah. Without you needing to necessarily know, like, if you've been sent X amounts, unless you need to, like, deposit or withdraw, until then, you don't really need to know you're using the blockchain in the first place. Technically. So,
like, it's fair, but then you just have, like, magic internet points in some app and you're...
At a certain point,
you need to like it connect or like understand the concept, I guess. Otherwise, you just have money that's not usable to you.
You'll have Apple Pay at some point on these kind of apps. Like, it makes sense to have this flow and to have maybe Coinbase Commerce do the flow for you. I think you can do this on Coinbase Commerce, right? You can probably pay with Apple Pay already, so. It probably isn't too far away from having the flow working, but to cash out though, I think it's a much more difficult. You can't like just send USDC to your bank account.
Gnosis Pay.
Yeah,
we'll cover that in another episode.
But Gnosis Pay is only in Europe, so I don't have access to it. So,
all right. Next topic. I brought along Polymarket, which has been. As the kind of US election is upon us this year, if you're in crypto, you probably know you don't even need to be interested in politics. It's just something that you get to see. So why Polymarket is becoming relevant? It's actually because the real Donald Trump account on Truth Social posts. Polymarket polls, which is very interesting. So maybe as a short introduction, so Polymarket is a betting market, which kind of like you can create any market or users can create any market, which is basically a binary outcome. So will Donald Trump win the US election? Yes, no. And then the yes shares or like yes and no will basically be like virtual shares. And then you can trade those shares and let's say the yes shares are worth 70 cents, then the market values the probability of Donald Trump becoming US president with 70%. So it's kind of like binary. I think they're also starting to do multiple options in one pool. But like so far, it's like the most often used type of pool or type of bet is binary. So I don't know. will, I don't know, will Donald Trump be the president, or will the 49ers win the Super Bowl, or will Taylor Swift attend the Super Bowl, stuff like that. Why is this relevant in crypto? Or what's interesting about this? So prediction markets on real world events are illegal in a lot of countries. I'm not exactly sure like what the global jurisdictions are, but in the US they're definitely illegal. And there even has been kind of a CTFC, whatever, like commission, Commodity Futures Trading Commission or whatever. Yep. They fined Polymarket in 2022. So Polymarket is kind of operating in a legal gray zone. They have barred US users from even depositing money. But they are hosting a kind of giant in terms of like real world betting. Markets on the US election. Donald Trump posting about this, very unusual. Usually they just post like the normal polls. And now they've started to pick up Polymarket. So for those of you who are only listening, we are looking at a screenshot from Truth Social, which is this weird social app that I think Donald Trump got banned from Twitter 2 or 3 years ago. And I think technically he's unbanned on Twitter, but he's not come back yet. He or his team, probably his team, they posted a screenshot from Polymarket on their website, which basically shows to have Donald Trump a 99% chance to win the South Carolina primary elections. That's pretty interesting. And then they also kind of threw in like a bunch of other statistics in there, which is a 90% chance that Donald Trump wins South Carolina by more than a 20% margin, and also an 87% win that 87% chance that Trump wins every state. I think this is really strange, and it's kind of hard to contextualize this. So the way Polymarket how accurate are these bets, right? Like that would be like the first question that comes to my mind. And I think there's probably a very not linear, but like almost linear relationship between the amount of money bet. So Polymarket kind of reports this as in this market, for example, will Trump win every state in the Republic nomination? The chance at the moment is 87%. And there has been, let's say, $250,000 bet. And what this bet like translates to is just the volume. You kind of think about like, I think there's like a certain volume threshold that you need to pass in order for the results to even be relevant. But then the more there has been traded, the better the results should theoretically be, because there has been more kind of market activity. But also one actor could kind of like sway the whole picture here. So like if you're like a really motivated actor and you actually want to like kind of manipulate these results with a million of capital, or like even, I don't know, like I can go in here and I can, let's say I want to buy 1,000 shares. I can still do that for the average price of 87 cents. So like this is still the odds that are kind of valid today. But then as soon as I go to 10,000 still works. So maybe let's try 50,000. With 50,000 I'd actually move the percentage up like 1%. So like the bigger the market, the less my impact, but then it's also like the more kind of money I need to sit on the table. There's like a lot of like interesting, how do you call this again?
Dynamics.
There's like economic. a game theory things like going on here. It's like, who's really that motivated? And like, what's the incentives? And like, Polymarket is also like a labyrinth. So like there's like a lot of layers to like, you can bet on like 5 or 100 different things almost on like, how does Donald Trump win the US presidency or how does he not? It's like, you can bet on like the primary elections, and then you can bet on the global elections, and then you can bet on like, does the Republican nominee become the president. And it's like, so there's like, there's a lot of different kind of aspects and levels to this. And it's sometimes like a bit hard to understand. So I think like Polymarket could probably do a bit better on like curating this. I think they're trying, and like they've been actually shipping a lot of product improvements over the last weeks. There was like another bet on Alton there. But anyways, we're here to look at metrics. So Polymarket is currently doing. So last month, they had their record month with $55 mm-hmm. million dollars of trading volume. So if we put that in relation to DEX trading volume, mm-hmm. that's absolutely nothing. I think we're, Denning, do you have on top of your head the DEX trading volume of a common month?
I believe it's
okay. Like a few billion. Dobby's on it. We can hear it.
Wait, is it monthly?
It's so like it's like 7 days
per day.
Yeah, it's 3 billion per day.
3 billion per day.
Oh, so 90 billion in a month. Yeah, roundabout.
Yeah.
So let's say 100 billion a month. So Polymarket with its mere 50 million is 0.2% of that. Is that?
Yeah.
Does that math? Yeah.
Does that math?
So yeah, it's a drop in the bucket, and especially if you, I'm sure if we just consider like the meme sector or something, it's still like a like super super small like subset of that. Like in Polymarket, it's not meme coin trading, but like I think those types of persons could probably be like they could be interested in internet gambling or something like this. So if you compare it, Polymarket is really like not a big player in crypto at the moment. But if you kind of look at the volumes, and if you especially look at the open interest, I think so the open interest is basically like how much total like bet wager amounts are currently inside of bets, so kind of like locked in capital, kind of like total value locked, like not mm-hmm. total value locked inside of the platform, because like they mm-hmm. they also utilize like a smart account system, which is actually pretty cool. They create like a one out of one multisig for you in the back end on Polygon. But anyways, so it's not the total amount of capital in the system, because like as you can see, I just have capital in my Polymarket account right now, like $380. But I have not kind of like wagered this on some bets. So my portfolio amount and my cash amount are the same. If I were to now bet on something, my cash amount would go down. So what Richard Chen is measuring on his dashboard with the open interest is actually the amounts that are bet on something. It's not like just the capital that's sitting around. So like TVL for Frenchek, for example, is like usually measured in how much money is like on in total like locked in Frentech wallets, and this specifically is just the amount that's actually invested in something or like currently like riding on a bet. So that's only 14-15 million, which is nothing in crypto terms, and I think this amount is due to grow a lot during this election cycle, especially with Donald Trump, like the real Donald Trump account, like not I want to say personally, but like they're doing marketing for Polymarket for some reason. I've already thought, like, is there some VC connection there? Like, is the Trump group invested in Polymarket? The Polymarket team has really been grinding it out. So you can see they've started this in October 2020. I think this the first spike might actually be the first US election. I'm not sure. They've been grinding it out, and now they're finally finding kind of, I think they're like close to a stage where they're finding product market fit. There's also like, I know that the rationalist community over in San Francisco is like kind of using manifold markets or something like this, where like they're just betting with play money. But like, that's like, yeah, game theory and blah, blah, blah. It all kind of works. But like in the end, I think we'll get to like a more accurate picture of the world if like betting markets actually use real money.
It's like there's two user styles. There's the bet, the guy who bets, and the guy who just wants to wage like what is the current like market telling us, and which is probably somewhat of a better like proxy for sentiment than like socials are, because you know, there's like basically MEV, and you know, if there's a bet that seems very skewed to an unfair side, someone has like advantage to basically as all reasons to do some MEV and re-equilibrate towards like the right percentage that he views. So it is a really good way to assess like sentiment for something, I think.
Yeah.
But that's also, like you said, correlated to like the confidence you could put towards how well assess sentiment is probably correlated to how much is in the pool of money. But yeah, so as this grows, this should get increasingly interesting.
One comment I have about this Donald Trump thing is that, like, I find it's a mismatch of marketing, because like I imagine most of the people who adopt crypto are more liberal, and it doesn't sound like the Donald Trump supporters are gonna be easily and smoothly just like go there and vote, or they will have to go through like the onboarding process. It could be my stereotype, I guess, and or I don't know, maybe he will onboard more of his supporters through this. But I would guess this is more of a thing that somebody just created and he saw it and he posted about it, instead of like he actually went there and created a market about it. I'm not sure. But also one question would be like, wouldn't it be very easy to manipulate the market if it's a very small money market, you know? Because like, so one thing is that imagine, okay, there's all these liberal people who adopting crypto. They see this Donald Trump prediction market. They go there and vote no. It wouldn't look great for Donald Trump. He will be like, okay, how can I deposit money here and like show myself as 99%? And if the total pool is just a few million or just even a few hundred K, then it's very easy to flip. And it doesn't really represent, you know, actually the majority of people, etc. So
yeah, there's even like if, you know, one person represents like 50% of the pool, then it's pretty, not necessarily a really good proxy.
Right.
You can't really assess like how diversified it is, because you could create like 50 accounts and make it look like it's 50 people.
But,
you know, as the pool of money grows, I guess it gets harder and harder to control the pool, and thus becomes in this way like more decentralized in opinion, I guess. So that's, you know, that's why like the bigger the pool of money is, I think the more like the better it is for sentiment.
Totally.
Yeah, I think so. In my mind, so Trump is rated the best on Polymarket. So the Polymarkets are actually really bullish on Trump. And if you look at normal kind of like voting sentiment or like polling analysis and stuff like that, they're all like more, I don't want to say bearish. They predict the, I don't know, they poll the voters differently, and the people on Polymarket seem to be especially kind of certain or more certain than the average or like the other polling markets. So those are just surveys where they call people, or they, I don't know, and I don't know how they do surveys nowadays. So they send emails and they ask people like, what do you think about this? That seems interesting. And I think there's like a lot of studies on like that prediction markets are like accurate and stuff, but there's all these game theoretic aspects, which, yeah, it's going to be super interesting how this plays out. But I think this is going to be one of the stories to watch this year. And just like seeing the user numbers, and the user numbers are actually surprisingly low as well. So one of my kind of favorite analysts, Mr. Data Wolf, he's always like really methodical about his approach to things. He's actually done, he's built a dashboard as well. And Polymarket only has like 12,000 or like 11,000 and a bit unique users. So there's a huge market to be captured. It's not that well. I think it's like slowly seeping into like more mainstream circles. So I think Polymarket is actually like, that's predictions are a bit late for 2024, but I think Polymarket is literally going to onboard people to crypto in like big numbers. I'd be very surprised to find that this number hasn't grown to like over 100K once the election day hits.
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, like you said, like Trump doing marketing for it. I don't think that's really, it's just like it's there and whatever is under the hood doesn't really matter. It's more like crypto allows for this. It doesn't matter that it is crypto. Yep. It's just that it wasn't really a thing before. And yeah, I think that's pretty cool. It's one of those, it is in line with Dymo and Farcaster, where it's like consumer apps that make sense to be built on top of crypto and actually improve in a lot of ways upon like the Web2 alternatives. And which is true for all three of these, I think. Like Farcaster is, I think, superior to Twitter under the hood. Dymo is superior to Venmo under the hood, and you know this as well. So I think that's pretty cool. It's cool that we start seeing like actual apps that make sense built on crypto rails.
Yeah, this is also a bit of legal arbitrage, as always, yeah, like sprinkled in. So like, we'll see what happens and if this eventually gets forbidden or if like I don't know how it could be forbidden. But yeah, really, really, really interesting story to watch, and I'm sure to have an update in a couple of months on this or as soon as it becomes relevant. All right, moving on to the final topic of the day, which is Hildobi is gonna tell us a bit about ERC-404.
Exactly. So before speaking about ERC-404, I just want to give some context. It's before this whole thing was a thing, if you look back on the previous bull market, there is different NFT marketplaces. And the one I want to talk about is called NFTX, which allowed for you to fractionalize your NFTs into sub parts within of that NFT and trade those instead of the NFT itself, which can be quite costly. And you don't necessarily want to trade a whole NFT. You know, it just opens access to more users. And the way that worked is you essentially locked up your NFTs and you had the equivalent in ERC-20 that were given to you. So you had like probably, I guess, one whole amount of that ERC-20 or whatever that represents the whole NFT. And then you could trade it on Uniswap and other DEXs. So that was the thing. And the problem with it is it does really fractionalize, you know, not only the NFT, but the market into like two parts, which since they're not well integrated one with another, it means like, you know, it's just harder to see what is happening on both at once. And no platform was really, I think, well built with that in mind. And it's also, you know, I worked with 0x Rob on like NFT stats on Dune, for example, and we always were like thinking how do we handle NFTX? We never really did because we're like is it an NFT protocol? Is it an ERC-20 protocol? It's really, is it a DEX protocol? I mean, it's really, really hard to like, you know, where do you put the line between the two? And I think, I mean, the best way to deal with it thus far has been to not deal with it. So that's what we did. You know, it's always been something that's like been in the back of my mind. But recently there's been a new token called Pandora, which it's, wait, share my screen, which is essentially a hybrid between ERC-721, the base like standard for NFTs, and an ERC-20. And it does this by basically being non-compliant with the standard and mixing the two in ways that were definitely not intended. And basically at a core level, you can trade the same the token with the same address on both an NFT exchange and a DEX. The way that works is if you trade a whole NFT on the back end, the person who sold it has the equivalent in ERC-20 burnt, and the guy who receives it has the equivalent in ERC-20 minted, and vice versa. If you trade, you know, if you increment up the amount of that ERC-20 you have in your wallet, you get one NFT automatically minted, and vice versa if you increment it down. So you can look at stats for Pandora. I think the reason Pandora is the interesting one, is because it's the one that, as far as I know, introduced the entire like standard, which is not, it really isn't. I do think as well, the reason people call it ERC 404, which is not like actually an ERC at all. Like it's just weird to call it that, but I guess it's like 404 for like not found. That's my best guess here. But it is actually like not a standard anyone has put in place. It's just they created it and other people started copying it. So you can see.
Hold on. Yeah. So there's basically like an internal connection between the 721 and the ERC20. And
it's the same when you do an
Yeah. So like inside of the smart contract, there's like a, if you do something to the ERC20 side of the smart contract, or like not side, but like if you do like an ERC20 transfer inside of the contract, it also changes the internal state of like the 721.
Yeah. So if you look on like the contract, you'll see all the calls and events from ERC20s and ERC721s are both available within the contract. And they're like kind of like smushed together with some mechanics that kind of break the standards from each and make it into one. The big downside is that to have all those calls and events, you need to pay high gas fees, right? It's it's pretty costly in gas, and it's pretty inefficient. Especially, I don't necessarily know the Pandora team, but I don't know if they're like a Solidity expert and probably didn't necessarily optimize their contract all that much. And one interesting thing is if you look at actually like how has it fared in terms of trading, it's basically all DEX trading, like 99% of the volume, 99.4% as well of the trades. And for traders, it's 99.5%. So it's basically overwhelmingly DEX volume. The reason why that is if you look here, the NFT reached like 13 ETH in price. So of course, it's much easier to trade as an ERC20 than its NFT equivalent. But you know, the still is the problem of gas fees, which are really, really high. And actually, some devs got together, and instead of creating a contract, they created the code for like an improved version of that ERC 404, which instead of actually calling ERC, called a divisible NFT, so DN 404, which makes more sense because it's actually not a standard in the first place. So some of the more popular optimizers and Solidity devs on Twitter got together, made this, and one of the big differences, like if you want to look into the optimization, you can look into the code. That's not really like it's not my expertise, so I'm not exactly sure everything they did, but they improved it a bunch. And the difference is here, there's two contracts. So there's one contract for the ERC20 and ERC721, which are both connected and, you know, interact in the same way. So it, under the hood, there's two contracts, but otherwise it works exactly the same, where, you know, changing the balance of one on your account will increment or decrease the account of the other correspondingly. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. I don't know if this will take off. I'm not sure yet, like what use case other than, you know, NFTs that are priced too high and fractionalizing those. Is it like in high demand? Is there really like, you know, we I don't necessarily have the data for this either, but there's back in the last bull, a lot of people realized that the NFT traders and the DEX traders were really two different two different markets. And if you look at the set of addresses that overlap between the two and are like, you know, heavy traders in one part are not necessarily heavy traders in the others. And also, if you look on like Twitter and everything, they seem somewhat segmented. You know, this, it seems like two different sets of users. So we'll see how this evolves. I think for now, it's more of an interesting like tech demo than anything. But, you know, that's how most things start out, right? So maybe there's like one that makes sense. I think, you know, Pandora, it's just like every first mover has that I don't know, I guess interest around because people, you know, it's the first one to ever do it, so I guess it makes sense in that sense. We'll see. Maybe it remains a good proxy, much like I think like Ordi is for BRC20s, because it was one of the bigger first BRC20s. So yeah, we'll see. But it's worth monitoring and just keeping a close watch on. It's very recent, so there's not much yet that has developed other than the price of Pandora going up to 13 ETH, which is, I think, pretty big actually relative to other NFTs, right? There's like,
well, how many are there?
I think it's a small supply, right? It's a good question. The thing is, they're technically always minted and burnt. 5,500 right now. That doesn't account for all the. You need to assess the exact. Oh wait, I'm not sharing the right tab. My bad. So here 5.5, but yeah, it fluctuates, although it's been somewhat stable, but it doesn't account for all the ERC20 dusts, that are in tokens that don't make up to one, right? So the market cap is higher than 5,500 times, whatever the price is. But yeah, we'll see. The price definitely, sorry.
What? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, relative to other NFTs, there's not that many that have a floor this high. There's, like, CryptoPunks, Apes, and Budgie Penguins, probably, that are over it. But otherwise, there's very few, right? Maybe some, like, collectors with very low supply. But, I mean, within this range of high supply, I don't think there's that many.
Yeah, but I wanted to point out, like, I feel like the liquidity aspect for NFT is a double sword. So like, it's this design of this 404 standard definitely helped the liquidity aspect, like helping the NFT to be much easier to be traded, etc. And I assume it will actually add more fluctuation to the price chart. One other thing I read online about ERC-404, its downside is that there's already been a bunch of rug pulls happen, where like there's this one particular example of like this Punks token, which was like launched by, you know, like whatever anonymous like contract, and turns out after, you know, it went up to, so it like started with maybe $350 price, went up to 20K, and after which the deployer, actually whoever behind it, would like basically dumped like minted another few thousand and dumped into Punks to with Uniswap pool, and like people lost like everything, and like it's worth nothing now, and the person behind earned 42 ETH, like around basically $100,000, and so it's and there seems to be a bunch of other Punks related, you know, ERC-404 happened in the past with this rug pull, so it's kind of sketchy.
Yeah, I mean, like, just like all new things are, I feel like scam and like phishing heavy, because it's easy to dupe people into thinking they're doing the right thing with a really novel sector. So that's just an unfortunate part of this being novel. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, you know, when you're a degen and you mint something that's this new, like, it is to me, if like it's part of the risks, right? You're not pricing in just what you're buying, but you're also pricing in the risk of the underlying smart contract risks, or not even just smart contract, or like rug pulls, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe if we run the experiment and we think, like, if Bored Ape Yacht Club was ERC-404 during the last bull run, would this have increased the price? Would the price have never gotten so high? Like, how I think that like, at a certain point in time, Bored Apes were so kind of like inside of pop culture that probably a lot of people would have bought like a fractionalized thing. And I think there was like fractionalized shares of Bored Apes on like, I don't know, NFTX and or like fractionalized.art, or like, I think there was like two projects who basically did this, or like even three or four. I don't know. So I think if that was more accessible and built into the protocol, more people would have probably like participated that way. And then it's like a flex if you have like a whole one. I don't know. I can kind of imagine that happening. I think you can have like a broader range of backholders where it's like, ah, yeah, there's like some people who have like, I don't know, maybe you could compare it to like, I don't know, like Mercedes builds like really, really expensive cars where like one car is like 300K, and then they build like lower range cars where like you can get one, a new one for like 40K. So like maybe like you're just like capturing more of like your audience or like potential people who can buy something by having like fractionalized shares like inbuilt through the protocol. I think
until you can trade it on like one UI, that's what I think really is the problem. If you look like compared to NFTX, technically the user experience is the same, right? You can buy the NFT or the underlying ERC20 fractionalized on NFTX, and basically it's the same as trading one on Blur and one on Uniswap right now. So I think the big unlock, and that's where we'll see if it actually makes sense and takes off, is like when we can trade both within one UI. And then, you know, like what is the goal of a Bold Ape holder? Is it like to have it as a PFP, and then like what do you put as like a, do you put like a third of it, like you cut off the PFP? Like that'd be funny, but I don't know.
Maybe, I mean, you could get access to like the Bored Ape events or something if you like have like above a certain threshold or like I don't ask me why people are holding Bored Apes like as like a I don't know, I can see the investment thesis kind of, but like if it's part of your lifestyle accessories or whatever, I would question something. I'm just trying to like make sense of this and try to come up with like where could this be useful. Maybe like if we think about more practical use cases of NFTs where it's like tickets, but like you can't have like a half a ticket. Like, you can watch half the concert.
There's some like assets where it makes sense, I guess, like probably with real world assets, there's something that makes sense there. Like I'm talking very long term and very hypothetical right now, but you know, maybe there's some things that make sense where just to pull together money when you go and have the whole thing by yourself, like representation wise, it makes more sense. But is it like really necessary, or could you just do this with one ERC20? Like, do you really need to have like the uniqueness of a whole thing representing an NFT? Like, does that really change something? You know, that's my question. Is like, if you can fractionalize the NFT, isn't the whole point then to just use the ERC20 that like is built very well, very robust, and you can have whole amounts and that can represent whatever you want? You just don't have necessarily a JPEG attached, I guess.
If we go back to Pandora, are they all the same or are they like unique?
Let me see.
Because if the longer I think about it, the more it only makes sense if they're all the same. If there's like any uniqueness to the NFT, that there shouldn't be like a floor Pandora and the like top percentile Pandora, right?
This is actually, you're getting into a very interesting topic, and that is that no, they're not the same. But the problem is, you can actually within this, the current like Pandora smart contract, you can actually I can't remember the technicals, but you can like, if you transfer between wallets, you can essentially choose the rarity of the token you have. So it's very easy for everyone to essentially have rares, and then like, if everyone has rares, what's the point? Like, is it rare? So like the token itself is very, it's not perfectly designed, and you know, like I don't necessarily understand the point of this current design.
What you're saying is there's a rarity system, but the rarity system is broken, and therefore there's no 100%. Rarity system.
This
seems very sustainable. This seems like a very like reasonable crypto market thing that these are valued at like 10 ether. I mean, innovation, I guess, like, let's go. But if it's not working, and like, what's the,
I agree.
Do they have a patent on like the ERC-444 like contract structure, and like everyone needs to pay royalties to them? Because otherwise, like, why would this specific project be worth that much? Like, I don't know.
These seems to be the three rarities, I think. And if you look, basically the three floors are of various rarities. So I would assume this isn't like how rarities, you know, that's not how rarities work on other NFTs, right? It's usually you'll see like probably all reds at the bottom and other colors later on, right?
Is there any lore to this? Are they gonna like unbox? Like, can they open?
That's my guess. My guess is this is like, I think this is like the unrevealed version of the NFT. Well, you know, it's like most NFTs, right? First you get an egg or a box or whatever, and then eventually some cartoon character comes out or something. I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting actually to see what they have in plan for this. Like, what does this new smart contract like actually like allow them to do that is very, very distinct from current NFTs and ERC-20s? I don't think all that much, to be honest. But we'll see. Especially like if you can game the rarity, ideally they would fix that in some way. I think Cigar's version, the version, the like, FN, DN 404, like fixes this in some ways, where like the rarity is not gameable, but you know, it's, I don't know. We'll see.
This reminds me of Dona or something. There was like a Kia Sedona, and then like Dona was like a project, and I don't know. This was like connected to SushiSwap, late 2022, I want to say, something like that. Dona. It's been a while, but they minted like ERC-20s. Then the ERC-20s were tradable, and then at a certain point, you could swap them for ERC-721. So this that almost accomplishes this purpose.
Yeah,
because like I do see some sense of purpose in this when it's like you are in this kind of like pre-mint stage where it's like we are trading these boxes and we don't know what comes out of it. If they all had the same rarity and if they didn't have like rarity trades, then it would kind of make sense for them to be like you could fractionalize them and then you could kind of like treat them as like I don't know futures almost, where it's like you're like trading on the hypotheticals and like there you don't really need to have like a hole. But like as soon as like there's a certain deadline, then you would be able to redeem them for 721s. So like for actually unique tokens, then it doesn't make sense anymore. I don't know.
Like, but then this what you're explaining makes more sense, because why would like everyone need to suffer the like high fees if you just here to trade like the RC20? Like you don't care about the and like having your NFT balance change as well if you just want to trade one or the other. So. Maybe like having two separate contracts and being able to bridge, like to convert one to the other makes more sense. It is a lot more gas efficient, right? It's also like token standards that are already designed and like somewhat battle tested already, like ERC-20s and ERC-721s. Whereas this is like being a whole new thing. It's like probably vulnerable to some exploits that we'll see down the line, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're arguing about like the weird things that people do on the internet. How many unique users were there? Like 1,500 or something. Who like actually traded this? I pulled up an article here and it's like they actually had like 100.
There's 1,400 NFT holders.
Yeah, so 1,400 weird people believe in this. Some weird dev. Like this is not even an ERC. Like it's not an official ERC. Yeah. So I don't think. Like, I don't know, this just from this discussion, it doesn't really sound like this is going to make it. But still interesting. It's kind of like ordinals also don't really make sense, or like they don't make sense to us, I guess. Maybe we are like the boomers of crypto now. My Farcast ID is too.
There's some cool stuff on like ordinals. I think it's like impressive how far they're going, like in terms of apps and stuff. Like, It's not just like NFTs on Bitcoin, right? And it's, I don't know, it seems to go pretty far. I don't know how much they can push the UTXO like standard to use all this, but it seems like it's going somewhere. I don't know, we'll see. It's definitely weird to build all these like. Basically mimicking smart contract capabilities on Bitcoin. It's definitely like very unintended, much like Pandora is like smooshing to standards together that were not intended to be smooshed together. Yeah. We already had like ERC 1155 for this, I guess, in a way. But yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, not really.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm
saying.
Yeah, you could.
Well, I mean, it's like there's no uniqueness in the. Well, I mean, you can have uniqueness, but you can have same IDs.
You could have like a ERC 20 style and an ERC 721 style token within the same ERC 1155. But then I think this like internal connection that I tried to like assign at the beginning is not there. But maybe if you modify the contract design. But yeah, anyways, this is just like people experimenting. It's interesting, but I guess like, I mean, comparing that to the volume of Polymarket, like that's crazy. Like that, like 5 of these NFTs are worth more than like the daily trading volume of Polymarket. Like yeah. What is like this industry doesn't make any sense. Like there's actually like, yeah. I guess the you can only win 50% if you bet on Trump winning. That's not enough. Like you can't retire off that money. But yeah. Anything more to add for ERC-4-4?
I think that's it. Maybe worth revisiting if something happens eventually. But for now, it's I don't know. I hope people adopt like the contract that was designed by Cigar. I think it makes more sense to like have people who have been in the industry for a while designing a contract rather than this, which was the rarity thing is definitely not like it's more of a bug than a feature, right? So there's some things that needs to be fleshed out, I guess.
Yep. All right. Final topic of the day. We have.
This is a quick one.
Yeah.
This is a quick one, but I wanted to, I think one of the, this is like feedback, we gave ourselves like on a last, end of last episode is like, we always look in things and we're deep in the rabbit hole, but we're not necessarily like contextualizing things. And I stumbled upon this tweet, which I'm pulling up right now. And I think it's a good example. So this is from Chris Dixon's book, Read, Write, Own, which I have not read yet, but plan on to. And yeah, he is looking at like energy consumptions and comparing the one from Bitcoin to other systems. And I thought it was a great example. So Bitcoin is very, being built on like proof of work is very high in terms of consumption. It's like more than half of the current banking system, which is wild. Even like, I think people don't necessarily realize as well that like the banking system is quite intense in terms of energy consumption. Stuff like proof of stake, Ethereum already is obviously a lot more efficient. If you look, it's like a 8,100 times reduction in terms of consumption, which is pretty wild. But Terra watt hours don't necessarily like speak to people, but I guess like the multiplier makes sense in like comparing this like one to another, especially since people, it's like consumption of energy has been a big topic in crypto, especially for proof of work chains. So obviously it's nice to see proof of stake being so much more efficient. But yeah, it's also nice to put it in perspective with other things and other systems, and like even just the Airbnb costing like 8 times more in terms of consumption is pretty crazy to me.
What do you think the energy costs of Airbnb here entail? Is it also like heating costs of like the apartments and stuff, or is it just the like headquarters and the software and stuff?
No, yeah, I think it's like all like the whole servers, the probably company wide consumption.
Airbnb is like very like that.
It's
not the best example to choose, I would say, because like you could really interpret this in like a million different ways. It's like like if you look at the banking system, is it like is it the heating for the offices, or like is it like just the servers like I don't know, is it the food that the employees have to eat?
That's true.
Obviously, like I think this the point true, is very true. Clear, but it's always like
Netflix. It's
like a lot of numbers in the world are just like very hand wavy, and it's like of course. Like it's written here. Yeah. Like I might as well believe this. It's what does this actually mean?
Yeah. I feel like one metrics could be helpful to add in the column would be like, for example, what's the fully diluted value or like the market cap of this company, like how much value it creates compared to the consumption, the energy it costs. And also, like, yeah, my question
is, it doesn't necessarily represent the same. Like, it's not, you know, the value isn't one-to-one representative of like how much like the stock is necessarily representative of the actual value it provides. And how do you measure like value comparing like Netflix to PayPal and Airbnb? Even I wouldn't.
They have market caps in their stock.
But is market cap really necessarily the best representative of like actual the value it provides to users? You know, like how would you measure value it provides in a good way?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But some sort of value needs to be attached, right? Because I can just say that is a MacBook. And then what does it say? It doesn't create. Yeah. It's like I produce 0.00000000 consumption here. But
yeah.
One other question is that like banking system, I wonder how they even get like total energy consumption of banking system across the world and from what kind of metrics they derive that. So it's interesting.
I guess it's like all banking operations, whether it's like transport of gold, Visa and MasterCard, all like the fees that are incurred between like all transfers.
But how would you even begin to like estimate that number? I think like that's what I'm saying. Like, I think a lot of numbers are just like very hand wavy. And it's like it's probably like some researcher at like some university you've never heard of. And like he published this paper in like 2005 and somebody just took this number and it's like, yeah,
possible.
That seems to make sense to me.
Possible.
But yeah, I don't know. Like,
this is with the assumption that this data is accurate. No. No, I doubt. I doubt he put this in his book and like didn't like do basic research on it. There's probably like the source somewhere else. This is just a picture, right? So maybe there's a source somewhere else for this data. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm within the assumption that like he somewhat fact checked at least these. Obviously these are probably very very much estimations and not like 100% factual. Yeah. Like that's because you can't get like factual stats for like what is the banking system like costing right now.
So
it's not like you have a June chart for it. But but like
maybe in 50 years we do. Maybe hopefully. I think directionally these numbers are probably correct. It's just like like very very hard to like even like you can argue endlessly about like what does this even mean. But I think the point is still very clear and like no flag to the author or like whoever.
But like even like the exact numbers doesn't matter here. It's more about the ballpark numbers, right? Anyway, so
yep.
That's why like I don't really care about like. Is it dead on accurate or is it like a little off?
All right. Cool. With that little philosophical tangent into like what does data even mean and how can we make sense of the world and what even is a banking system? I think that's it for this week. Thank you. This was a great episode. I think that there's like an interesting trend of consumer crypto going on at the moment. So I'm definitely kind of like hopeful for this year to be able to tell my normie friends, hey, download this app, it's really cool, and like they don't need to understand what's happening in the background, which is already the case for Warpcast. But it's still like it's a lot of crypto people and there's like a unique culture there. But in the end, we'll see what happens with these trends and we'll of course observe them in the Index podcast. With that, I think that is the end of the episode. Thank you for listening. If you're still with us, as in the last episode, we are trying to figure out how this works and, therefore any feedback is appreciated. See you guys in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.